Good morning. On today's programme, the UK government's concern that driverless cars will add to traffic congestion, and the Dutch drive-through, where you can pick up something stronger than just caffeine. But first we go to Kenya. The population of Africa's largest refugee camp situated there has swelled to over 300,000. Set up in 1991 to host Somali refugees fleeing the country's civil war, Dadaab is now also serving as a reprieve for those escaping the worst drought the region has seen in decades. As Amy Nirieda reports now from Kenya.
Halima Ali embarked on the challenging journey to Kenya over a year ago during another failed rainy season. With her seven children and brother by her side, she walked for over a week in the hopes of finding refuge in Dadaab camp. She's one of 110,000 Somalis who have fled to the refugee camp in the last 2 years, despite its original capacity only being able to cater for 90,000. Because Kenya has banned the registration of new refugees at the overcrowded camp, new arrivals have had to live in temporary settlements outside it, without appropriate amenities like toilets or wash areas. Makeshift shelters surround the original camp, constructed from old clothing and tree branches, the only protection for thousands of children forced to abandon their homes. Dadaab was established in 1991 as a temporary haven for those fleeing the clan wars, but now serves as home to thousands of people who are starving as the Horn of Africa experiences its worst drought in 40 years. The UN Refugee Agency reports that the ongoing civil war and famine in Somalia has resulted in overpopulation of the camp, with as many as 320,000 people trying to get into Kenya. Around 100,000 of those are unregistered. Resources are already overstretched, and the steady increase means the UN and its partners are struggling more than ever to provide water, food and healthcare to vulnerable children and older people. According to the UNHCR, over 3,000 children under the age of 5 were treated for malnutrition last December, and admissions to the paediatric wards have doubled in the space of a year. Like Halima, many families will have attempted to avoid leaving their country at all costs. In previous droughts, families would move out of their homes to nearby towns temporarily and go back when the rains eventually returned. However, this drought has eclipsed the others and forced many out of the country altogether. The journey to the border is grim. Halima has tales of incredibly dry conditions, animal carcasses en route, and her children suffering from weakness as a result of starvation. More than 7 million of Somalia's 15 million population are experiencing severe hunger. Ranked the second most vulnerable country to climate change in the world by the Notre Dame Global Adaptation Initiative, and with predictions of a sixth consecutive rainy season, it's likely the number of people leaving Somalia to go to Dadaab will only grow. Campaigners have been calling for many years for the camps to provide opportunities to refugees to play a more active role within Kenyan society by tapping into their potential rather than isolating them. Integrating them, they say, would pay economic dividends, since Somalia will not realistically be ready for a mass return in the near future. The camp has its own vibrant and diverse market, which reformers say should be capitalised on. Community members who provide and purchase a variety of goods and services, they argue, should be taught how to develop those skills for when they do eventually leave. In 2021, Kenya ordered the closure of Dadaab as well as another camp, Kakuma, giving the United Nations Refugee Agency just 2 weeks to carry out the order. The announcement of an official closure sent shockwaves down the spines of many of the camp's residents. Kenya rode back on that decision following intense pressure from the relevant agencies, and in January, the Kenyan government approved more land for the crowded camp to deal with the influx of refugees. Now, the government has committed to expanding water infrastructures and channeled some of the funding set aside for the expansion for green projects. It's the first move in almost a decade, which will provide a sense of security for the refugees. For children who have been there for their entire lives, it will, at the very least, reassure them that they won't be kicked out of the only home they've ever known, only to return to economic uncertainty and conflict. For World Report, this is Amy Nirieda in Nairobi, Kenya.
to the United Kingdom next, and as the world's automotive and technology companies invest billions in developing driverless cars, the British government has warned that congestion on roads could double within a few years as autonomous vehicles take to the streets. From London, Russell Padmore reports.
It's not that long ago that the idea of a car being driven by a computer was science fiction, but several autonomous vehicles are close to going on sale. Automotive giants like Ford, General Motors and Toyota have invested billions in developing driverless cars, partnering with technology companies. But adding many more vehicles to streets which are already clogged with traffic could make congestion worse. The British government has warned that traffic delays on major roads could become twice as bad. Starting in 2 years, congestion levels will rise 85% by 2060. A recent report by the Department of Transport predicts that more than half of cars will be autonomous by 2047. Here in southeast London, I just have to look out the window to see a traffic jam. In just a few years, the morning and evening busy periods have become much longer than the traditional rush hour. The British government's report on autonomous cars causing more congestion is a major concern for motorists here in one of the world's busiest cities. Analysis by the data group INRIX concludes that UK drivers lose about 80 hours a year because of congestion. But for people in London, that wasted time jumps to 156 hours annually. That's more than 6 days wasted every year crawling along in traffic. The government predicts jams will be made worse by a surge in ownership of autonomous cars, as older people, or those who don't have a driving licence, will buy one. The Transport Authority here in London is unpopular with motorists over its policy of preventing traffic from taking shortcuts through residential areas and a controversial plan to extend the zone for levying a daily charge on older cars for excess emissions. Other cities around the world, like Los Angeles, New Delhi and Rome, which are renowned for traffic congestion, will also be alarmed at the prospect of streets being clogged with even more vehicles, especially autonomous cars. However, the automotive industry is uncertain about how soon driverless cars will be widely available. The Japanese carmaker Toyota recently conceded that fully automated vehicles, capable of navigating on their own, will not be on the road for several years. Safety concerns include the fact that artificial intelligence is not immune to hackers. And if an autonomous vehicle is involved in an accident, who's responsible? Here in the UK, the legal body, the Law Commission, has said passengers in fully automated vehicles should not be liable. But the watchdog also recommended these vehicles should have a qualified driver on board to deal with any problems. This undermines the attraction of owning an autonomous vehicle for people who cannot drive. The UK government's report says that the ability to work or relax while travelling in a self-driving car means people would be more amenable to sitting in traffic. Last year, UK drivers bought more electric vehicles than diesel-powered ones for the first time, as EVs comprised about 1 in 5 of sales of new cars. And autonomous cars are supposed to be the next big development, but the rollout has stalled. General Motors promised mass production by 2019, and Ford's target of 2021 for selling fully autonomous vehicles is way behind in the rearview mirror. The UK warning that the introduction of autonomous vehicles will make traffic jams far worse in the next 2 or 3 decades could be flawed. It's based on the assumption that driverless cars will speed out of dealership showrooms soon, but there's a bumpy road ahead. As the cost of living crisis hits the pockets of consumers and economists warn of recession for many countries, it seems likely that the luxury of buying a driverless car will take a back seat. Even if the automotive industry speeds up the development of autonomous cars, the idea of buying one only to spend more time stuck in a traffic jam won't boost sales. You could move out of the city to a village in the countryside where traffic congestion is rare. But should you really go through the stress and expense of moving home just to own a car driven by artificial intelligence? This is Russell Padmore in London for World Report.
And finally, a new drive-through coffee shop with a difference has opened in Utrecht in the Netherlands. You can pull up in your car, pick up a coffee and some soft drugs, as Isabel Conway reports.
Picture this. Motorists pull up at the drive-thru behind a queue of other vehicles. At the serving hatch, they'll place their order. Not for a Black Angus premium beef burger with fries or chicken nuggets. This menu lists marijuana, hashish and cannabis. How about a potent marijuana, gorilla glue cannabis, a joint filled with ultra-strong nedervate, Dutch-grown weed, or a roll-it-up yourself plastic pouch of less mind-blowing imported cannabis? Utrecht, fourth largest city in the Netherlands behind Amsterdam, Rotterdam and The Hague, has just given the green light for the country's first drive-through coffee shop. The idea had been germinating for over a decade after a local activist, Chris Pilgrim, proposed one as a solution to nuisance around coffee shops and cannabis tourism in the historic city. A soft drugs pick-up drive-through on the outskirts would keep weed shoppers from heading into the heart of Utrecht, he had argued, but officials said no. In more recent times, the debate was rekindled as Utrecht developed a template for maintaining public order. Future drugs policy and combating women trafficking and criminality in the sex business. Now, Dutch cities are closely watching the problems drugs and sex overtourism has brought to Amsterdam. There, strict regulations come into force from mid-May to rid the red light district of drunken and stoned tourists and rising criminality. They'll include a ban on smoking dope on the streets, restrictions on shops selling alcohol, and a curb on new visitors entering the old centre after 1 a.m. Sex workers will also be required to close their venues earlier in response to complaints from residents about disruption caused by tourists. Under the famous tolerant approach in the Netherlands, soft drugs, whilst technically illegal, are allowed as long as coffee shops adhere to strict criteria. No advertising or sales of hard drugs. No sales to under-18s. No public nuisance. No sales of more than 5 grams per transaction. Coffee shops are forbidden from selling alcohol or stocking more than 500 grams of product. Now, in a move that may see cannabis legalised in future, several Dutch towns have just agreed to take part in a national experiment in which legally grown, controlled amounts of cannabis will be delivered to coffee shops in a bid to cut out the grey area chain of criminal supply. Back in Utrecht, the drive-through coffee shop is expected to be up and running in the coming months in a designated building close to an outer city parking terrain. The operator was given a 10-year contract to be reviewed in 7 years' time. Although Utrecht may appear a forerunner on soft drugs tolerance, the city has just 11 coffee shops, all of them spread evenly out, compared to over 160 in Amsterdam. We're less than 30 minutes away by train from Amsterdam, but it's another world here in Utrecht. We stay under the radar regarding drugs and sex tourism, and you'd hardly ever see foreign stag parties here, city guide Bart van Mierlo explains. We don't want to make the same mistakes as Amsterdam has done, setting so liberal an agenda they're now experiencing the downside and trying to row back. That will be very difficult for them to do because of all the pressure from businesses benefiting from international soft drugs and sex tourism, as well as the Airbnbs, he points out. During a long walk through the city's heart, we pass only two coffee shops. Anders Om, decorated with a Rastafarian Bob Marley logo and a large painted marijuana plant on the window, has cookie cutter traditional coffee and cakes, antiques and upmarket decor shops for neighbours. Later, I wander past a small red light district in the Harderbollen sidestraat I'd stumbled across years ago. All the window brothels have since been shut down, replaced by a pizzeria, bars, vintage clothing boutiques and a flower shop. The second city red light district, rows of neon lit windows in which scantily dressed sex workers sat on houseboats along the waterside of Nieuwe Sandpad, have also disappeared. These only red light areas were shut down by the authorities because of women trafficking and criminal involvement, says Jesse Holweg. a spokesman for Utrecht Municipality. After the houseboats were towed away, a walking and cycling riverbank recreation area was developed in 2020. Today, only two licensed brothels are found in Utrecht, and most of the prostitution has gone underground or is practiced in licensed massage parlours. We're so much smaller than Amsterdam that it's impossible to compare both cities. But we think we're doing a pretty good job providing a safe and pleasant city to visit. We continue to follow what's happening in Amsterdam as we're so close by to see how the new restrictions on soft drugs tourism work there. But we don't want their problems spilling over into Utrecht, he adds. For World Report, I'm Isabel Conway in Utrecht, the Netherlands.
Well, that's it from World Report for today. The programme was edited by Elaine Devlin. If you want to listen back, you can go to rte.ie/World Report or wherever you get your podcasts. We're back again at the same time next week. Until then, from myself, Justin McCarthy, and all the team, thanks for listening and take care.